The United Nations gave President Clinton a perfect campaign backdrop today, putting him at the center of a signing ceremony for a treaty designed to make the world safer. The president was the first to sign the nuclear test ban treaty today. He was surrounded by heads of state, diplomats, and media from around the world. In a speech afterwards to the UN General Assembly, President Clinton talked about the importance of the world body. But, in fact, many UN diplomats are seething at current U.S. policies towards the UN, from withholding dues to blocking a new term for the UN Secretary General. NPR's Ann Cooper reports from New York.
It's an annual tradition for the U.S. president to kick off fall speechmaking at the UN General Assembly. But in this election year, the UN gave President Clinton an added forum before his speech, a stellar signing ceremony for the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban, an international treaty that is supposed to end atomic testing for all time. The treaty's passage by the UN earlier this month was marred by India's announcement that it would not ratify the ban. India wants the U.S. and other nuclear powers to agree to destroy all of their nuclear weapons. But the main nuclear powers have refused such a pledge, and President Clinton said India should sign the treaty anyway, just as Russia, France, China, Great Britain, and several dozen other countries did today.
Some have complained that it does not mandate total nuclear disarmament by a date certain. I would say to them, do not forsake the benefits of this achievement by ignoring the tremendous progress we have already made toward that goal. Today, there are no Russian missiles pointed at America, and no American missiles pointed at Russia.
From the treaty signing, the president made his way to the General Assembly, where many of the 185 UN member states are angered by what they see as American arrogance at the UN. The world body is on the edge of bankruptcy, due in large part to some $1.6 billion owed by the United States in back dues. Equally infuriating, say many diplomats, are the Clinton administration's relentless demands for UN reform and its firm vow to veto a second term for Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali. Even close allies complain, saying the anti-UN drumbeat sounds like little more than presidential campaign rhetoric. Perhaps with that in mind, the president softened his rhetoric a bit when he addressed the General Assembly, focusing in part on how the United Nations serves American interests.
The United Nations is more important than ever before because our world is more interdependent than ever before. Most Americans know this. Unfortunately, some Americans, in their longing to be free of the world's problems and perhaps to focus more on our own problems, ignore what the United States, the United Nations has done, ignore the benefits of cooperation, ignore our own interdependence with all of you in charting a better future.
When it came to defining future roles for the UN, though, the president mainly repeated calls he made last year for more international cooperation to protect the environment and to fight terrorists and drug traffickers. The world, he said, should have zero tolerance for aggression, terrorism, and lawless behavior. The response to President Clinton was polite, but hardly enthusiastic. The president left the UN shortly after his speech, avoiding lunch with Boutros Ghali, the man he once replaced as Secretary General. He also missed subsequent speeches containing indirect criticisms of the United States, such as British Foreign Secretary Malcolm Rifkin's demand that those who owe dues to the UN pay up in full.
This year must see a solution to the financial crisis. Reform must be part of the solution. All members must pay what they owe, both their assessments and their arrears, and promptly.
Sharper barbs came from Russian Foreign Minister Yevgeny Primakov, who warned that in the post-Cold War world, no single power should emerge above others to act unilaterally. Primakov's remarks were simultaneously translated.
The second condition for achieving a durable peace is the emancipation from the mentality of those who lead and those who are led. Such a mentality is fueled by illusions that some countries have emerged as victors from the Cold War and others as the vanquished. But this is not the case. Peoples on both sides of the Iron Curtain, through their joint efforts, rid themselves of the policy of confrontation.
Primakov's remarks were clearly targeted at the United States and its recent unilateral actions in Iraq, where American missiles were fired to punish Saddam Hussein for military incursions into Kurdish territories. Unilateralism, said Primakov, provokes rivalry. But by the time Primakov rose to speak, President Clinton, the author of the latest unilateral approach to Iraq, had moved on to campaign appearances in New Jersey. I'm Ann Cooper in New York.